This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. A sheriff in Maine last month issued a statewide alert for the gunman who last week shot and killed 18 people at a restaurant and bowling alley and wounded 13 others. CBS's Matt Piper on what happened when it came up during a press conference today.
A testy back and forth between Maine Governor Janet Mills and reporters.
Excuse me. Please lower your voice, please. I'm not here to argue.
It's over reports that police across the state were alerted last month about threats made by the mass shooter. The county sheriff's office now says they were contacted by his family back in May, concerned for his well-being. As recently as September 17th, a deputy spoke to the shooter's brother, who said he would work to secure firearms the killer had access to. An alert was subsequently issued urging officers to use extreme caution, saying the man was armed and dangerous. It was canceled 1 week before the shooting rampage. Matt Piper, CBS News.
The gunman was found dead on Friday of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. After a nearly seven-week walkout at GM, Ford, and Stellantis plants, United Auto Workers President Sean Fain announces...
Now that we have a groundbreaking tentative agreement at GM, we're officially suspending our stand-up strike against each of the big three.
Workers at the three will see a 25% increase in their hourly pay over the next 4.5 years of the contract. Hamas is facing more ground and air attacks by Israel, as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says in a televised address.
Make no mistake, regardless of who stands with Israel, Israel will fight until this battle is won.
Netanyahu says there will be no ceasefire. Suburban Chicago landlord Joseph Chuba pleads not guilty to fatally stabbing his tenant, a young Palestinian-American boy, and wounding the child's mother. WBBM's Andy Dane.
Prosecutors have said Chuba targeted the two because of their Muslim faith and was heavily interested in the war between Israel and Hamas. The Justice Department is also investigating, while an attorney representing Chuba has expressed concerns about finding an impartial jury, noting that President Biden has even commented on the case.
President Biden unveils new measures to tighten artificial intelligence regulations. CBS's Stacey Lynn reports.
The president says...
Everyone has a right to know when audio they're hearing or video they're watching is generated or altered by AI.
He signed an executive order to help use artificial intelligence safely.
To realize the promise of AI and avoid the risk, we need to govern this technology. There's no other way around it, in my view.
The new measures require developers of AI systems that pose risks to national security to share the results of safety tests with the U.S. government. Also, AI-generated content will be watermarked and labeled. Stacey Lynn, CBS News, Washington.
Stocks closed up on Wall Street. This is CBS News.
You don't need a job platform, you need a hiring partner. Indeed lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Governor Evers says he isn't sold on a Republican-led bill to address PFAS in Wisconsin. The bill would create a grant program to help communities affected by PFAS chemicals and provide aid, but it would also limit the state's Department of Natural Resources' ability to hold those polluters accountable. Evers didn't commit to either sign or veto the bill in an interview with Wisconsin Eye on Monday. Governor Evers and Republicans who control the state legislature remain far apart on boosting Wisconsin's economy and dealing with the state's child care crisis. Republicans are proposing wide-ranging tax cuts and child care deregulation. The Democratic governor says he'd veto those bills.
That is not going to impact inflation. If we're worried about inflation, let's do a middle-class tax cut, and that's it.
Evers appeared on the Wisconsin Eye Public Affairs Network. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
The Bucks face the Heat. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It's the Bucks and the Miami Heat tonight at Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee. The Bucks losing last night to the Atlanta Hawks, 127-110. Bucks newcomer Damian Lillard just with 6 points. NFL Monday Night Football. The Detroit Lions with a rare primetime game at home at Ford Field against the Las Vegas Raiders. The Green Bay Packers have made their pass rusher, Rashawn Gary, one of the highest paid linebackers, a 4-year deal worth $96 million, Gary on achieving his goal.
It's not hard, man, when you come an organization like this, and you have guys that's going to work Monday to Sunday and want the same outcome. So it's not like everybody's down, moving around, we're hungry. And like I said, we're excited for the next opportunity. So as long as we have that energy, as long as everybody's pushing to be better and get better and hold ourselves to that standard, look each other in the mirror, understand what we need to do right and what we need to fix that was wrong, we'd be fine.
Linebacker Rashawn Gary with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Cloudy tonight with a low of 24. Southwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Snow showers likely tomorrow, 35. Chance of snow showers tomorrow night, 20. About an inch of snow tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 28 degrees.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM. Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM. This is The Shaw, WAUK.
The IEA projects that solar energy will be the dominant source of electricity by 2030 with existing government policies. However, the report warns that current policies won't be fast enough to avoid accelerating climate impact. So the IEA calls for a tripling of renewable energy and a doubling of energy efficiency efforts by 2030.
Keep calling for much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today. Check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about, huge victory. The big three have, well, surrendered. I mean, look, strikes work. Worker action works. Worker power, militancy, all the stuff we've been talking about for years in this program, it works. Been saying it works for a long time. It works. And I was looking at the 36-page document that was kind of leaked to me by some of the folks at the UAW going, hey, this is what we got. This is big stuff. This is good stuff. And yeah, if you were to see what they started out with to where they ended up with, world's difference. And again, you know, what we've been saying all through this six-week process is Ford, GM, Stellantis, where they were all saying the same thing, all reading from the corporate playbook. We can't possibly afford it. We can't possibly afford anymore. Yes, we know billions of dollars in profit. Yes, we know quarter of a trillion dollars in profit over the last decade. Yes, we know we pay our executives, you know, $1 billion over the last decade. Yeah, we know all that. But we just can't afford an extra, you know, 25 cents. We just can't afford to have, you know, things for workers, you know, can't afford that cost of living adjustment that has been restored in this contract. We can't afford to get rid of those divisive two-tier, three-tier wage systems, which has been eliminated. Can't possibly have the kind of wage growth that historically has been the norm. No, can't possibly have tuition assistance, which was increased to $8,000. Can't, you know, have family days maintained, which they have. A whole list of, I mean, pages of stuff that before the strike, sorry, we just can't do it. Yeah, we need to be competitive. And yet here at the end of this strike, What they got was almost everything that they were looking for. And look, you know, I remember the demands. People were saying, oh, these are outrageous. This is a moment for the Democrats to take the master's class on negotiating. I know they wanted a 40% raise. They wanted a 32-hour work week. There were a lot of things. The press went crazy. Working people telling me, that's too much. And you go, this is negotiations. This is how you do it. You set the goalposts way out there so that you move backwards and you still get a darn good deal, which is what they got. You ask for the sun, the moon, you ask for everything, and you settle for what you're willing to settle for. And now what you're going to see is, this isn't the gold standard job that it was when I was a kid, but we're moving in that direction. And how did our mainstream media take it? Business Insider headline, workers at Detroit's Big Three are set to make up to $35 more than at Tesla, thanks to new union contracts. And I'm like, that is a great headline. Because those Tesla workers are going to go, what? They make $35 an hour in compensation more than we make for doing the same job? Hey, maybe we should unionize. And look, this is the UAW's next step, to go to those other auto companies and say, look, you can do better. You can have a better life. You can do what Rick talks about all the time. Union job, better life. You can do this. And look what we were able to accomplish with worker power. Not that the laws were on their side, not that government came to rush, although Biden, got to give Biden props here. He did walk the picket line. He did stand in solidarity with those workers. So come election time, UAW, yeah, I got to tell you, it should be a no-brainer on who you're going to endorse in 2024. The guy who was literally on the picket line saying, hey, you deserve the wealth that you earn. Not the guy who was telling you your leadership sold you out and you should stop paying dues. Just kind of throwing that out there as an aside. But today, all I got from the naysayers, and it's amazing to me, is, well, you know, the union didn't get what they promised. And again, it's a lack of understanding how to negotiate. You start off way over here saying, hey, we want all these things. And then you settle for what's really important. Now, for me, what I think is important and what history is going to remember, not the historic wage gains, those are really important, not the cost of living adjustment that's been restored, not all of the good things that they got, not the thousands of dollars in signing bonus money that's coming, not the better life that's coming because of this job, but the fact that they were one of the first people to bring up the idea of a 32-hour work week. Because here's the thing, as technology continues to make productivity gains, the question has to be brought up. What good is it to have an economy if it doesn't benefit working people? And I guess the main question is, why do we have an economy? What is an economy good for? Does it exist to make the few wildly wealthy at the expense of the people who are doing the work and being productive? Or is it to make dreams possible for working people? Is it to help them raise families and lead a prosperous, decent, good life? Is that possible? I mean, the age-old question, do we work to live or live to work? And for me, this component of it, all the other stuff is fabulous. All the other stuff is good. I think they're going to ratify this contract because looking at the 36-page document that was sent to me, I don't know how you turn this down. But for me, it's that 32-hour work week. Because understand, the thing that we take for granted today, the idea of an 8-hour work day, was completely foreign to people in the 1880s and 1890s. In the robber baron age, it was unthinkable that workers would only work 8 hours. Frequently, they were working 10 to 16 hours, 6 days a week. That was the norm. The norm was you basically lived to work. You showed up to make the boss profit. And you were disposable. You were the ultimate gig worker. So this idea that gig work is new, it's not. We're just stealing from the robber baron era. But I couldn't help but think about the fight for the 8-hour day, 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will. It was a battle cry for a generation of workers in the 1860s, 1870s, and beyond. Look, you know, understand, before the eight-hour movement, there was a 10-hour movement that didn't take hold. But people grabbed onto the eight-hour day, the idea of, you know what? Life should be more than just about work, and that we should share in the wealth of our labor. And look, you know, the moneyed interest, they didn't go quietly into that eight-hour day. They weren't on board with it. There were a few corporations who said, okay, a few benevolent corporations who said, okay, we'll go along because the workers did what workers do. They folded their arms and they marched their feet. The only power that working people truly have, which was on full display the last 6 weeks with the UAW. But it really wasn't until we passed a law, the Fair Labor Standards Act, that mandated a federal maximum hour law of 40 hours. Not the eight-hour day, but 5 days a week, 40 hours. The math added up. So the eight-hour day became the norm. And in union shops, it became the eight-hour day. Overtime started after eight. In fact, I still work in a place where that is the norm. You work 9 hours, you get paid an extra hour overtime. That's how it was. That's what it was for years. And corporate America has destroyed this. And I go back to, understand, the 40-hour work week, the eight-hour day, corporate America did not go silently into that fight. They spent money hand over fist, created organizations, the National Association of Manufacturers, who still, by the way, are one of the thorns in the sides of workers, but the citizens' alliances of that era, who were created specifically to go after working people, keep them in their place, and specifically against the eight-hour day, because it meant lower profits. Because understand, people wanted the eight-hour day, but the same pay. And what they tried is that what they do all the time. We'll throw a little money at you. Here's a raise. Without understanding that 8-hour day, going from 16 to 8 for the same rate of pay, was an enormous raise. They couldn't possibly meet that. But the wealthy understand, here's a couple of trinkets, here's a token. And we're going to fight this. And look, they started their movements, and the merchants and manufacturers associations of the era, who, you know, again, campaigned against the 8-hour day, campaigned for open shops, so can't have labor unions. And for me, I see this moment. This could be a triggering moment. And not triggering in the bad way. No, no. Triggering in a positive way that gets people going, hey, why are we working so hard? Life's short. Why are we spending so many hours working for someone, making them profit and not making our lives better? And look, I can see us going for a 32-hour work week movement. But again, it's going to have to be at the same rate at 40 hours. And I would argue we're already working, 60 hours a week for 40 hours pay. So for me, this is a movement opportunity. This is a movement moment where working people can go, yeah, the UAW had a great idea. And what's exciting about this is the UAW of the Reuther era. This is the UAW that built that, not just auto worker job prosperity, but help build a broad-based, prosperous working class in this entire country, to where the eight-hour day we still benefit from, to where overtime, weekends, minimum wage laws, safe working conditions, all of those things that people of the past fought, bled, and died for, we take for granted. There's an opportunity right now for us, in this moment, this generation, to fight for something that in 100 years, people are going to look back on and go, hey, look what they did for us. And maybe it'll be normal and they'll take it for granted. But that's okay too. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Have the talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, I was reading this story today about Joe Biden and his legacy and this idea that Biden is thinking, he's thinking about the future. Her name, Jill Lawrence, I think is her name. She wrote a piece. I think it was over at the Washington, it's either at the Post or the Times. I forget off the top of my head. But she said, you know, surprisingly, because of his age, you know, he's an unusually forward-looking president. And I'm going, no, he's that way because he understands legacy. He understands that he wants to be remembered positively for having accomplished something to help make working people's lives better. I think he gets that. Out of any president of my lifetime, I think Joe Biden understands that better than anyone. But let's quick go to the phones. Got Steve on line one. Steve, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. And I think you sometimes see that kind of attitude, and I don't want to sound like an old fuddy-duddy. I mean, I'm 55, but, you know, among younger people who perhaps didn't have that experience, whose parents didn't have that experience, it may be to them some sort of revolutionary idea that someone would support, you know, basic wage standards and decent retirement programs and decent workplace safety standards and these sorts of things. You know, for Joe Biden, you know, he's of that generation. They remember the labor movement. They, you know, either he remembers it directly or vis-a-vis his parents and how terribly people lived, you know, through the Great Depression. And then what happened after the Second World War in terms of how great the economy came to be with the help of organized labor. You know, people worked 8-hour days, as you pointed out. And if you worked overtime, you got time and a half. My dad, he sometimes wouldn't spend Thanksgiving with us until later in the day. And on Christmas, he sometimes wouldn't get there until later in the day. Why? He said, hey, I'm at the steel mill. They're offering us triple time. Because, hey, you know, everybody else is willing to be with their family. They need somebody to work that day.
Yep.
And, heck, you know, you're out of your mind if you think I'm going to be here with you guys to eat Thanksgiving at noon. We can eat Thanksgiving dinner at 6. You know, I'm going to work.
Yeah, but it wasn't triple time, Steve. It was double time with the day's pay. Because he would have gotten paid the day's pay whether he came to work or not. He got paid double time. I have to clarify. That's one of those weird things that I have that I want to make people sure that they understand. Because you know, it's still in some places possible for that today and could be again in the future.
Yeah, exactly. And for some people who, again, are too young to understand this, their formative years were spent totally alienated from that kind of a concept of a world in which, you know, they didn't know anybody who had a pension plan. They didn't know anybody who has a decent job who only had a high school diploma, you know, or a trade school background. And that's the problem. There are people who still remember this, and Joe Biden's among them. So this idea that, oh, he's looking forward. No, in many ways, he's looking backward. And what he's witnessed is the erosion of those things in terms of the quality of life that many Americans enjoy. My girlfriend, you know, if you've got a girlfriend or wife, you have to watch TV with them, you know, this is just the thing you have to do. So she's on this watching the Gilded Age program on HBO. So yesterday was the first new episode of the second season, and it's all about the robber barons and that time in American history in the 19th century you're talking about. And go figure, I was laughing. She didn't know what I was laughing about because last night's premiere episode for the second season, there's a meeting with one of the leading characters, and he's meeting with Jay Gould. And, of course, Jay Gould pulls out that famous quote you love to talk about, you know, you could pay half of the poor to kill the other half. He says it right there. I start cracking up. And she's like, what are you laughing at? I'm like, well, I don't want to go into it. But, yeah, I mean, and they were talking about, you know, how indignant they were about what unions wanted. Oh, my God, an 8-hour workday and workplace safety standards and days off and these sorts of things. They thought that the people who wanted this were absolutely crazy. But as you were talking about, what is the point of this? I mean, the whole notion about what my father and my grandfather thought about life was, you know what, for my kids and the grandkids and going down the road, it will get better and better and better. And that was always the American dream. And you're right, you know, we're automating very quickly. By some estimates, half of all manual labor jobs will disappear in the next 25 years. Okay, I'm not going to bemoan the idea that the guy who comes at 5:36 in the morning to pick up the garbage here in downtown Chicago isn't going to have his gig. If we can fully automate that and robots will do it and AI, great. If that guy then can work less, can go somewhere else and do something so that he only has to work a 30 hours a week, and the rest of us can also do that. So guess what? We can have more time with our family. We can do other things, pursue arts and sciences. Who knows what a great society we might develop into? This was the whole Gene Roddenberry dream. When people think of Star Trek, that's what Gene Roddenberry thought. He said, you know, with enough technological progress, we could wipe away the things that we are at war about all the time, the things that we're constantly arguing about and protesting about, that there would be enough for all. Because a lot of the things that we have to do today ourselves will be automated by machines, so that there's no need to pay somebody for that extra labor to grow the food, to process it, to deliver it. All of that could be done automatically. So then why in heaven's name would you need to charge a fortune for it just so people can eat? No, not everybody gets a mansion, but everybody can have a decent home. You don't owe everybody a Rolls Royce or a yacht. But they can have a decent home, can have decent public transportation, and they can have enough to eat every day. Now, if you want to work harder and do other things, I don't begrudge you the capacity to be the wealthy guy in town or one of them. But the people at the bottom should have enough to get by without having to do much in life. That should become at some point, because of the technological advances we've made, that it should just become a human right. You should not have to do anything to just survive. That should just be something that society can provide for you. And beyond that, it's up to you. If you want to waste your whole life playing video games, okay, fine. I'm willing to feed you through that process and give you a prefab home. And if that's how you want to live your next 50 years of your life, that's up to you. But other people, I assume, want to do something constructive with their lives. They'll want to cultivate some talent that they have. They'll want to make a contribution.
No, I'm right there with you. You know, it's that, you know, the call for the 8-hour day, 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what you will. I love the idea of expanding for what you will, whatever that is. As you pointed out, could be video games, could be doing this little program, could be, you know, any number of things that people want to follow their passions, or they just want to sit home with their kids. There could be opportunity. Yeah. I fear, though, we're not going to get to that place, because much like the 8-hour day and the fight for the 8-hour day didn't happen broad scale until we had laws that made it so. And our politics are so broken right now, I fear we can't make the kind of adjustments necessary to get us to the place where we need to live the kind of life that you're talking about.
Well, and I will say this, you know, for many years, the argument was that, well, you know, if you don't give people an incentive, you know, then they won't work, and you won't have a productive economy. Look at the authoritarian socialist regimes of the 20th century. Okay, you know what the great thing about technology is? Technology doesn't have an ideology. And if you put AI in a cornfield and robotic equipment there in order to cultivate the land, it doesn't care whether it's in a socialist society or a free market society. It doesn't work more or less efficiently. So in that sense, you know, technology, it will free us from that debate, because it's not as if technology is going to work less hard because, oh, well, I'm working in a socialist regime. I'm not going to have to work very hard. I mean, what do I have to gain? No, that's not the way a machine thinks. So that means you could actually be as productive. And guess what? We could all share in something. I'm not a socialist, but I do believe that you can share more of what we have in this society, and people can enjoy a better life. And guess what? Every time we've done this, it has improved the quality of life for everyone, because when people have more time to think about the things that they want to do in life, they create new things. They create the better mousetrap. They create the new art and the new expressions and all the things that we value in life, as opposed to having to work. I mean, we've all been there where we had so many friends who were talented but they had to give up their dream. Why? Because they have to pay the bills and raise the kids and do other things. Why? Because society won't give you the chance to go with your dream, because you simply, there is no formula for that, unless your parents are loaded, in which case, take until you're 35 or 40 to become the great artist or actor or musician or anything else you want to be. But if you're not loaded, well, you're going to have to give up on your dream sooner or later.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. In the investigation into Maine's mass shooting, CBS's Jeff Pagaz reports on what law enforcement knew about the gunman.
The U.S. Army confirmed to CBS News that several months after Robert Card made threats and acted erratically in July, a health and welfare check request was initiated.
Family members tell federal investigators that the shooter, who was found dead Friday, recently talked about hearing voices. GM reaches a tentative agreement with the UAW, and it appears to mirror the contracts with Ford and Stellantis. UAW President Sean Fain.
This will be the most lucrative contract for salary GM workers in their history. For our hourly workers, it's the same story.
As the humanitarian crisis grows worse in Gaza, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu maintains that his mission is to get rid of Hamas.
Make no mistake. Regardless of who stands with Israel, Israel will fight until this battle is won, and Israel will prevail.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wuggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Governor Evers called on the state Supreme Court to throw out Wisconsin's current legislative maps in a legal brief filed Monday. The state Supreme Court announced Friday that it would take up the case challenging Wisconsin's maps. Evers joined State Attorney General Josh Call in writing a brief supporting redrawing the maps. Evers added he wants the case to move swiftly and that not one election should take place under the current gerrymandered maps. The Supreme Court will hear oral argument on the case next month. Four different hunting seasons in Wisconsin start next month. Gun deer season is the busiest. It starts November 18th. There are also hunting seasons for beaver, mink, muskrat, and otters. The Department of Natural Resources is reminding hunters about safety and to make sure they have the proper permits. The DNR is telling non-hunters to be aware that a lot of people will be in and out of the woods in the coming weeks. I'm Nate Wuggehout, Civic Media News.
Timeout.
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Cloudy tonight with a low of 24. Southwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Snow showers likely tomorrow, 35. Chance of snow showers tomorrow night, 20. About an inch of snow tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 28 degrees.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons, like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Your home for the Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. On The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Standards of ethical conduct. Seriously? Including the notorious money sleaze, Clarence Thomas? But wait, even a progressive justice, Elena Kagan, joins in the charade that an ethical code might produce, well, ethics. Or at least political cover for the lack thereof. A code, she surmises, would, quote, go far in persuading other people that we are adhering to the highest standards of conduct. Hello, would you be persuaded? Yet, these Supremes won't even take this minimal step of adopting a simple code to measure basic integrity. It would be a good idea for us to do it, Barrett meekly says. It would be a good thing for the court to do that, Kagan echoes. This is Jim Hightower saying, stop it. Stop the pitiful posturing. There's only 9 of you. You're in charge. Convene a happy hour, confront reality, and do the right thing. Just do it. I'll buy the beer.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I came across this ad a couple of weeks ago, it's been now, put out by the good folks at We the People 250 Action Fund. And it's a great little couple of seconds. It's kids saying the Pledge of Allegiance. But underneath, you've got the court documents from Trump's January 6th stuff. And for me, it really, it really kind of brought home this idea of, and justice for all. And, when we were kids, we all stood up, we said the Pledge of Allegiance, we repeated it, but never really, I don't think, thought through what it meant. In fact, a lot of my right-wing friends who, they love the Constitution in their pocket but never read it, they love the pledge but don't remember it. This is important stuff, and that's why I thought it'd be a good idea to reach out to Tim Ryan, former Ohio congressman and founder of the We the People 250 Action Fund, and get some thoughts on this. Tim, thanks for taking time for us.
Great to be with you.
So walk me through, what is this We the People 250 Action Fund? What'd you start? What are you doing? Why?
We're a landing spot for the exhausted majority. And we know there's a lot of people out there really in both parties, especially post-Trump, that are just looking for a home. They know everything's broken. The economy's broken. The political system's broken. I think everything's been scrambled. And people are looking for a place to land. So We the People 250 is for us to acknowledge that, we're coming up on the 250-year anniversary of the country. We are lucky we've made it this far on multiple occasions across the way. And we're here to honor that and say, look, if you're exhausted, you got a home with us, let's figure this out. It starts with conversations. Some of the solutions may be liberal, some may be conservative, but we're not even talking to each other. And that's where we got to start.
No, the last time I talked to you, one of the things I said is, I want to get to a place where it's not about red hat or blue hat. It's about hard hat. It's about getting to work and rebuilding this country and moving forward together to where with liberty and justice for all is possible.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a guy in Youngstown, Ohio, and you do what Donald Trump has done, you're dead in the water. But if you're an elite, you're a billionaire, you're famous, you've had TV shows, you're, a president, you can get away with stuff. And that's just that when we did the ad about, justice for all, that's got to mean something. And I think most people in the country feel that way. And regardless of how you feel about Donald Trump, you got to look 4 states, 90 some, and it counts. I mean, it's like, come on, man. Like, you imagine this is how you and I would talk about this. Like, your buddy comes to you and says, oh, my God, I think I've been screwed. They rigged it, whatever. You got charged with something. And you're like, well, man, I'm sorry to hear that. And then, in another state.
Yeah, I got charged 91 times, but, hey, 191.
Like, yeah, wait a minute. And then another state, and then another state, you're like, okay, bro, you're not allowed over the house anymore. stay away from the kids.
Exactly. And this is where I come back to what's happened to this country. Is we've been put into our camps where, if you're wearing a red hat, you're not seeing any of this stuff and you're not even paying attention to it because it doesn't fit into your neatly constructed right. ideological narrative. And the same thing on the extreme left. I'm not leaving them out of this. But, with Trump, it is this kind of confirmation bias that has really put us on the curbs or on the sidewalks, if you will, when all the action should be happening in the middle of the street.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think you hit the nail on the head. It's about workers, whether you're white or black or brown or gay or straight, if you're out there busting your ass every single day, you need to be at the center of our economic system. And that's just not whether you're talking about the Fed, whether you're talking about supply side economics, with deregulation, you know, the boom and bust cycles that have been going on since the early 1980s, like that has killed the working class. And you've seen it in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. We've seen it, you know, in Youngstown, Ohio. And the thing is, you know, you realize at one point, boy, there's a hell of a lot of places in this country that look a lot like Harrisburg, PA and Youngstown, Ohio, than like the suburbs of some, you know, other big city where everybody's doing really, really well. And yeah. And what you and I and others, I think, have to do, and what we're trying to do, we the people, is try to unite those groups and say, boy, we got a hell of a lot more in common than we do as our differences. And how do we bring this whole thing together?
You know, I talk about it all the time. I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. If you ever flew into Hopkins Airport, you know, back in the early 70s and mid 70s, you flew over my house. And I said, you know, look, you know, the reality is as a young kid, I saw a neighbor get a job at Ford and their lives got better immediately. They had food at the end of the month, eventually got a secondhand car, eventually moved out of the projects altogether. Union job, better life was ingrained in me as a small child. And I see what's going on right now at the big three in this contract that I don't know if you've seen the details, but this is really good stuff that I hope is going to put not just auto workers on the right path, but the entire working class back towards prosperity, to where work is rewarded. So for me, today is kind of a big day.
Unbelievable. I mean, just reading the top line, and obviously the details, you know, will come in the following days. $42 an hour, bro. I mean, $42 an hour. That's $84,000 a year. That is a working class, middle class wage that you've been screaming about for years. I've been screaming about for years. And the profits of the company will not be diminished all that much. But yet everybody who works for them is going to, you know, if you have a spouse that works and makes 40 or 50 grand a year, and you're making 80 some grand a year, probably before overtime, you know, you're at $120,000, $130,000 a year. Now you've got your head above water. Not that you're, you know, burning money, but you have a solid middle-class life. You may be able to take your kid to a Browns game or a Steelers game or a football game or a Buckeyes game or
whatever. Nobody's allowed to take their kids to a Steelers game. Ever.
and so that, I mean, but that's it, isn't it? I mean, like, you just want to be able to have those moments with your kids, a little of a vacation every year or two. You know, you go to the beach, you see the world, and you're giving your kids something special. And that's all this is about. And I just think, like, we're not asking for all that much. These guys don't want yachts. They don't want to fly themselves to the moon. They just want a good living, and they're going to put a hard day's work in for that. So this is a monumental thing, and I hope it reminds everybody how important the union movement in the United States has always been, and it's going to continue to, I think, perpetuate the building of the middle class.
Now, where I started today's program is talking about, look, it's a historic contract. It's great. But the part for me that I think is important, and maybe you'll agree with me, maybe you'll come along with this, is the fact that they were demanding a 32-hour work week. Now, they knew they were never getting that. But the fact that they're they're the first group to put this out there and for people to grab onto. I'm looking at this as, you know, kind of like the mid-1800s. Where, you know, people were talking about a 10-hour and eventually an 8-hour work day, 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what you will. The business community, major backlash back then. It was met with ridicule and all kind of stuff until the working class grabbed onto it and said, hey, how come we can't just work 8 hours a day? And I'm hoping that happens now, where people go, hey, how come we can't just work 32 hours a week at the same rate that we're working 40 and spend more time with our family, spend more time for what we will, as opposed to having to labor while technological gains are happening at incredible rates and the wealthy are getting wealthier while we're stagnating and actually declining.
Yeah. And we're gonna have to ask our workers to be smarter, work smarter, which they will, and they'll learn the skills, and here comes AI and here comes these other things. And I think you're exactly right. I mean, you look at our society across the board and you see deaths of despair, you see depression, you see addiction, you see, you know, the suicide rate. There's a level of hopelessness out there. And what are the things that actually, and there's a level of disconnection. What are the things that actually make you feel alive. If you're on a, if you're in a very important job and you're aligned with your mission in life, you consider yourself pretty lucky. But most people are out there, you know, doing a job hopefully they like, and making a wage and have a retirement and some security. But what's the most important thing? Your family, your friends, your community.
Yep.
And so, you know, I've traveled, you know, last couple of years running around the state of Ohio in the Senate race. And I met so many people, right? They were working 6-7 days a week, 12 hours a day. It sucks the life out of you. You're barely making a wage and you never see your spouse. You end up getting divorced. Your kids, you know, you get completely disconnected from your kids. What the hell are we talking about here? You know, this is about being connected to the people you love the most and who love you the most. And you should be able to bust your rear end for 32, 40 hours a week, make a good wage, and be able to spend the rest of your time doing the things that really matter.
Well, so that thing we grew up with, and we're about the same age. We grew up, you work hard, play by the rules, you get ahead. Should be the reality for every working person in this country. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Tim Ryan, former Ohio congressman and founder of the We the People 250 Action Fund. You can find their website, wethepeople250.us. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at this. Now, I come back to this idea of working hard, playing by the rules, and getting ahead. And as you pointed out, you know, with a decent income, you know, maybe with two incomes, you can get by. You know, my grandparents, they got by on one income. Sadly, we're in an era, and I believe this, and I don't know if you'll agree with me, but we're in an era right now where we need three incomes, Tim. People are falling that far behind. And you look at states across this country that are gutting child labor laws because we got to get kids back to work because, hey, families need income. We're at an insane moment where I'm hoping this UAW victory awakens a sleeping giant of a working class that has been abused for so long that eventually they say, you know what? We too have had enough.
Yeah. You know, it's when the wages have gone down and we saw workforce participation rates get down into the mid 60s, even the low 60 percentile, because work didn't pay. And we've been talking about this since Bill Clinton, like make work pay. If you're going to give tax cuts, give them to working people. And you will find that if people are making a good wage, they will go to work and they will work because they want a better life for themselves. It's human nature. And so, but the problem is we build an economy from pretty much 1980, you know, late 70s, early 80s. And then the whole supply side economic thing was everything was about finance. We moved away from manufacturing. We moved away from building things. It went to finance. Then it turned into tax cuts for rich people and trickle down economics. And it completely screwed. And I normally say another word, especially at 9:45 at night, but completely screwed working class people, whether you were white or black or brown, man or a woman. And so what we're trying to do, and I think Biden has to get some credit for this, reindustrializing the United States. That's the CHIPS Act. That's the infrastructure bill. That's the Inflation Reduction Act. That was all about reindustrializing the United States of America, building shit again in this country. And now we're getting there. And so that's important. And that's why we have an opportunity to rebuild the middle classes. When you get the manufacturing, you get the unionization, you get the higher wages, you get to what the UAW is doing. And why do they have all that leverage? They have all that leverage because they are now front and center in industries of the future around batteries, around electric vehicles and all this other stuff. Now they got some leverage and they're putting a flag in the ground and God bless them because there's a lot. Let me say two real quick, Rick. There is a lot of people who left closed factories like in Lordstown, Ohio, and they had to go to Toledo. They went to Fort Wayne, Indiana. They went to Detroit. They had to leave their homes. They're commuting back and forth. They left their kids. They left their spouses to keep their job because they had 5 more years till their retirement. That's a pissed off group of people saying this enough's enough. And I think that fuel is what gave, I think, the impetus to this strike having so much kind of robustness to it.
But this is, again, you know, the reason that I'm such a big fan of what Joe Biden's done. And look, I understand the working person who said, hey, we're going to give Donald Trump a try because he did. he did grab my family. And look, I've said it before, my family is basically the basket of deplorables. They've always been all of those horrible things. It's the reality of living in a very segregated era that they lived in. But they never voted. They were never, none of those things, racism, misogyny, homophobia, none of that got them to the polls. What got them to the polls is Donald Trump telling them he's going to revive Brook Park Avenue. We're bringing back all those jobs at Ford and those feeder plants that fed into that lifestyle that they were afforded because they had good, solid wage income, union jobs that made their lives better. That's what they heard. And he did not deliver, never had a plan or had a chance of delivering on it, and really didn't. It was about the rhetoric, but that's what they bought, Tim. And I think you know that as well as anybody else.
Yeah, and they had, I met same group, Rick. I mean, we grew up in the same kind of place, same kind of people. And I've had a lot of Democrats, rank and file union members, when Trump got in, they said, I waited a long time to vote for somebody like this. You know, he said all the right things. He struck all the right chords. But, you know, the reality of it is he didn't reindustrialize the country. He had, you know, 104 infrastructure weeks and never got anything done. He's not talking about building stuff. He tried to nuance the union thing, right? Even with this current strike, he couldn't quite figure out how he was going to play that politically. You stand with the unions. You know, you stand with working people, whether they're union or non-union. Yep. What's so hard about that? And so he did not deliver to try to penetrate through the, but it does signal how people feel about the Democratic Party right now, which you and I, who are Democrats, I know I am, that like we got to acknowledge that there's a real issue here with working class people saying, man, I know I don't like Trump, but geez, oh, Pete, the Democrats aren't talking my language. And
well, to be fair, Tim, if I can stop here, to be fair, look, there's a lot of reasons for working people to look at the Democrats with a little jaundiced eye. I mean, you go back to Carter was going to undo Taft-Hartley. Bill Clinton got me to vote for him because strike replacement was going to happen. And I shook Obama's hand twice, and he told me we were getting something better than EFCA. Got none of them out of anyone. So it's not surprising that people right. are a little off. I'm now looking at Jelly Bucket Joe going, hey, here's a guy who talked the talk, literally walking the walk on a picket line in Detroit, whereas Obama told me he was going to get his comfortable shoes and get out there. Biden actually found those comfortable shoes.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. But we got to acknowledge that. Like, when people are saying, do I go with the insurrectionists or do I go with the Democrats? And that's even a choice to where we lost the House and barely kept the Senate. And Biden barely won. Like, that is such a deep-rooted problem that I do fear that there are Democrats in the Beltway who just aren't getting the depth of misunderstanding and the disconnect in our party. And yep. that, if you don't acknowledge that, Rick, we're never going to make any progress. Now, somebody's got to say, I get it. At least start there and then try to rehabilitate. But my fear is that we aren't going to rehabilitate the image. I do think, if we're speaking frank here, because you and I are buddies, like, people aren't feeling good about the economy. All of this stuff happening. I voted for it all. I support it all. It's the greatest reindustrialization in America. But people aren't feeling it yet. You can't tell them they're feeling better than they're feeling. It's not a recipe for success. And so I just, as a friend and an ally, caution my party to say, you better get this right, because people aren't feeling it on the street. And I live in Ohio, and you're a working class guy who rubs elbows with working class people too. They're just not feeling it. Right. And so you got to come up with something better. That not that, no, I'm really telling you, you're doing better. And you say, no, I'm not. You say, yes, you are. It just doesn't work that way.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think, again, what we're seeing on the UAW line, I think the fact that, you know, they're fighting for those wage increases because the profits are there. I mean, we could argue why the economy is going the direction it is. I wish we would have today's Harry Truman or Teddy Roosevelt to go after corporate profits and monopolies and all that. I'm still hoping for it. But, you know, I think unions are the way to level the playing field, get people the wage increases that are going to make their lives better. And I do see some of that happening. I do got to get your thoughts on a couple of things before you run. Ohio, big election coming up on Ohio on issue one and issue two. Issue one is the abortion issue. Issue two is the legalizing marijuana issue. I guess the right response is yes is good, no is bad. And the disinformation campaign, wow, I've been reading some crazy stuff coming out of your state.
Yeah, no question about it. To me, really, both of these issues are about freedom. You know, you want to talk about freedom. It's whether or not the government's going to be in your bedroom. Here's the thing on the issue one with the abortion issue is that if this does not pass, Ohio will have the absolute most restrictive abortion laws in the entire country.
Right.
I mean, your daughter, young daughter, 13-year-old daughter could get raped, get pregnant, and there would be no recourse in the state of Ohio for that situation to be dealt with in a mature, thoughtful way.
And what it does also is it creates desperation. And look, I've said this a million times on the abortion issue. I personally am not in favor of abortion. Then again, as an old white guy, I'm never going to have one. I'm on the pro-safety side of things. I don't want my daughters having to go into back alleys like their grandmother's generation had to do to get the care that they need. So for me, I'm pro-safety above all else. So to have it safe, legal, that to me is paramount. All the other stuff is just noise in my view.
Yeah, 100%. And it's, I don't think anybody thinks that abortion should be used as birth control or anything like that. This is about these situations that the government has they can't get into every single circumstance. So just leave it to the woman, let her make the decision, and you know, and let's move on. This is huge government interference in the lives of average people, women who, last I checked, were citizens of the country and have rights. You know, if this was an issue about taking these rights away from men, I think there'd be a whole different conversation that we're having in the country. But you have to give women, you have to trust them to make the decision that's appropriate for them. And I think the same with the marijuana. I mean, we've got so many young people and people generally in prison, obviously tilted towards the black community, the brown community in prison for basic marijuana crimes. It's insanity, paying billions and billions of dollars of money that we could be reinvesting back into education, skilled training, shop class, healthcare, prevention, infrastructure, all of these things that we need to invest money in. We're spending it in the most absurd way, keeping young people in behind bars for marijuana crimes. I mean, this goes back to Nixon, goes back to those years of the war on drugs. And look, people are adults. They can make their own decisions. One thing with kids, but if you're an adult and you want to smoke some weed, who gives a shit? Like, let's be honest, like, don't hurt anybody. Don't drive. Don't, you know, all these other safety precautions. But my goodness gracious, $40,000, $50,000 a year for somebody who's, you know, smoking a little bit of weed. I think society's moved well beyond that. We've got bigger fish to fry. Just look around the country, right? Do we have bigger fish to fry than like someone smoking a joint?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, get the government out of our business. Let's deal with the big economic, structural economic issues, these foreign policy issues, retirement, pensions, all these things. That's where the focus needs to be, not on this dumb stuff.
Yeah, we got lots that we could spend all day on and talk about. I love having you. The website, wethepeople250.us. How can people participate? What can people do? What's the help here?
Yeah, come on in. We're going to highlight, Rick. It's a great organization. We want, again, the exhausted majority, but we're going to highlight the solutions that are out there that get no oxygen in the current environment. How psilocybin is healing vets. How cannabinoids and cannabis are healing addiction. How food as medicine is reversing chronic disease and lowering healthcare costs. How regenerative ag can sequester carbon and get us healthier food, resuscitate rural America. Like the cool things that are actually working in the country that aren't like the polarizing issues. Come to We the People. We're going to have these discussions. We're going to highlight it, talk about it. We want a representative in every county in the United States. And we're going to build a great organization that's going to help celebrate America. So we'd love to have, I know your audience is a lot of people who care about America and want to participate. So come to We the People. And Rick, you're more than welcome. I'll wave your I'll wave your fee to get in, man. You're like, come on in, we want you.
No, I love the idea of talking about issues that our corporate-controlled mainstream media doesn't spend time on. Because, look, again, I go back to that frame. It's about red hat, blue hat. We got to have the race. We got to have the fight. It's got to be this competition of who wins and who loses, not how do we make lives better. And for me, True North is how do we make working people's lives better? What policies can we act? What direction do we take? For me, it's that simple.
You're on it. The fight is against inequality. Right. The fight is against poverty. The fight is against, you know, people not having a secure retirement. That's the fight, not against each other. Those are the.
You're listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.